He's still stepping out. Paul Revere of the Raiders in our TC studios here this afternoon. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be here. BJ. I like your bear.
You like my bear?
I like your bear.
He has been hibernating since New Year's Eve. He got into ugly Dell champagne on New Year's Eve, and he's been hibernating. That was some kind of champagne. Hey, that was some kind of show you put on Wednesday night. You're out at the Carlton backstage now.
Right. That's fun.
I want to tell you, I haven't laughed so hard in a long, long time.
Yeah, the show's crazy. It's fun to do. Yeah.
And it's not just fun, but the music. The music is good.
Got me a killer band, don't I?
You sure do.
I do. I love those guys. They're great.
Now, this band that you have with you now is not the original Raiders. There have been many Raiders. Any idea how many?
Oh, over the last 22 years, there's been, I guess, about 30 different Raiders. Depending on when you were growing up, that's who you would remember. But these guys have been with me longer than anybody. Drummer's been with me 9 years. Guitar player has been with me 8 years. The bass player, 7 years. And the other guys, just 1 year. But the cream of the crop got me the best band I ever had.
Ooh, real versatile everywhere, from the Bee Gees to Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, you name it, they can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
Let's go back to the original Raiders, if we can. You mentioned that...
Original, you mean what you remember. That's not the original.
I've been doing my homework. See if you can, you might get me here, but now the original Raiders were started in Oregon about 1962. Isn't that correct?
That's close, but now, you probably read an album cover.
No. No, as a matter of fact, it's the Encyclopedia of Pop Rock and Soul.
Well, what do they know? They never talk to me.
Oh, okay.
Now, those things don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Okay.
No, I started the band in 1958 in Idaho. So they left the four most important years blank, didn't they?
Well, but when did you become Paul Revere and the Raiders?
About 1959, I guess. It was about the first 6 months we didn't have any name. Didn't need a name. We were the rock band of Idaho, and the only one. And then finally we thought we'd be cool and get a name. And so the first name the group was the Downbeats. And then the first time I went to California to make a record deal, when the record company found out my name was Paul Revere, they said, "You got to be joking." I said, I've heard every joke you can come up with my whole life. You know, I've been kidded about my name. And they said, "It's perfect. It's perfect. You know, we got to use your name." And I was always kind of ashamed of my name because, I mean, always got given a bad time. I mean, ever since I was born, you know, it's been, "Where's your horse?" You know, and what are the other dumb, you know, comment everybody thought they could be original with, you know. I heard them all a million times. But they came up with the idea of calling the group the Raiders. And first he was going to call them the Knight Riders, Paul Revere and the Knight Riders. And I said, no, I don't think so, because there was a country and western band back home that was called the Knight Riders. So I didn't want to get confused with them. So that's it. They call it Paul Revere and the Raiders. And I says, okay, we'll go that route.
You had a single on a small label in Idaho that the name just escapes me.
Gardena Records.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But that was a California label, Gardena, California. And but we released it in Idaho. That's where we started. And then it spread into Oregon and Washington, up in Seattle, and eventually the first national hit we had was on Gardena Records. It was called "Like Long Hair," and probably before you were born, about 1959 or 60. I can't remember what year.
Okay,
but that was our first national hit record. I remember Dick Clark played it on American Bandstand, and I went, "Whoa, we've made it!"
What about the battle, the cover battle over "Louie Louie"?
Well, we put it out first. It was simple as that. And this little high school band up in Portland, Oregon, that used to follow us around and steal all of our stuff from us, steal our material.
Just can't remember the name of that band.
I sure can. The Kingsmen. I know those guys, every one of them. Fact is, one of the bass player in that group is now one of my agents. He books us. But in those days, they were just a bunch of high school kids, and they. But our record was out for about 3 months. It was number one all through the Northwest, but it didn't go nationally because the record company just didn't know what to do with it, And we were the first rock group to be signed on Columbia Records. And they did, you know, the heaviest thing they owned was Doris Day at the time. And they really didn't know what to do with a song like Louie Louie. And so this other disc jockey up in Portland got this bright idea to cut the Kingsmen. And they did a version of it. And then he got a record deal back east on a label called Wand Records that was an R&B label. And then their version took off back east and just, you know, became a monster. But they never got their record played in the Northwest.
Paul Revere and the Raiders doing Louie Louie on TC.
You have a thing called Louie Louie.
That's the doodah. That's the live version of Louie Louie.
Right.
Now, tell me about the single that you cut.
Oh, well, the single version, which there probably is very few copies left around anymore, but that was, we did that in a little bitty studio in Portland, Oregon. Cost me $50 for 1 hour. And all they ever cut in there was radio commercials. They never cut a record in there. And it was a two-track, which I don't know if that means anything to anybody out there. But anyway, we went in there and we just cut it. Did the instruments and then added the vocal. And that was it, two track. And it took us less than an hour, but we had to pay for a full hour. And we did both sides. Louie Louie was on one side, Night Train was the flip side.
For $50.
$50. And actually pressed it down our own label at that point for about a month or two. And after it became number one around Portland, Seattle, and that whole area, then I made a deal with Columbia Records. And we became their first rock and roll band on the label. And they took the master, their $50 master, and pressed it up. And that's how we got on Columbia.
Paul Revere of Paul Revere and the Raiders, give that man a blue ribbon.
And I could have went down there and just sold him out of the back of the truck. Here's another over $200.
Paul Revere of Paul Revere and the Raiders, how did you meet Mark Lindsay?
Oh, he delivered buns to a drive-in that I owned, a little drive-in restaurant, hamburger joint, you know, where everybody, you see American Graffiti, the movie?
Sure.
One of those kind of places where everybody drove up in their hot little car and showed off every night and drank a Coca-Cola for 3 hours while people showed off their cars. So that was what I had. It was a little drive-in, a little hamburger joint. And Mark was, he was just 15 years old at the time, and he delivered my bakery goods to the drive-in, and I used to talk with him, and then I started a rock and roll band, and he used to follow us around, because he loved my band, and he used to beg to get up on stage and sing, you know, at least one or two songs every night, and so I used to let him. After about a year or so, I eventually I told him, I said, well, if you could learn to play something, you know, put you in the band. And at that time, I thought a saxophone was what I needed in the band, because groups like the Champs, you know, Tequila and some of those songs that featured saxophone, they were hits at that time. So I says, you know, if you buy you a saxophone, we could learn, you know, some songs by the Champs and different acts, groups like that. And so he bought a saxophone. He just went out and bought one day, and didn't know how to hold it, didn't know how to blow it. He didn't know what to do with it. And he came over to the house one night, and we just worked all night on it until he finally got it to make a noise. And he learned to play it all wrong. He held it wrong and everything else, but he didn't know. You know, he didn't know any better. So to this very day, he plays saxophone probably more unique than anybody in the world, because he never really learned how to do it right, so he learned it his own way. But believe it or not, old Mark is a good little rock and roll sax player.
And he then left the band for a period of time, but then was back for your first national hit, the first biggie.
No.
No?
No. What years are you talking about?
Well, I guess he joined you in Idaho.
Yeah.
And then when you went to Oregon, was he with the band the entire time?
Okay, I know what you're talking about now. Yeah, there was about a year that I gave up the band. I just, you know, hung it up. And he went to L.A. and starved for about a year. And then I went down and picked him up. And I says, Start another group up in Portland. And, yeah, okay.
Okay.
So you get your story right.
Okay. there's a lot of story to tell.
Yeah. Well, 22 years, boy. I tell you, there's a book there. Yeah, unbelievable all the things that happened. Unbelievable.
How about your first national hit? How did you feel about that?
That was exciting. I mean, there's nothing like your first hit record. Nothing. I mean, fact is, the first time you hear your record played on the radio is the most exciting thing in the world. It's, you can't believe it, you know. I'm on fire. I'm so excited.
And if you're just like me, you're glad to see Paul Revere and the Raiders are in town.
That's right. Rocking our brains out there. You got to get everybody in this whole area out there, you know.
Carlton Backstage.
That's right.
6:30 and 10:30.
Yep. I wonder, they got good food out there. I ate out there last night. It's dynamite. Great food.
Television. How did you hook up with Dick Clark?
That was a complete freak accident. Everything in this business is an accident, you know. It really is. I don't care what anybody says. When it comes right down to it, it's pure luck. That's all there is to it. Because there's a lot of talented people in this world that will never be heard of. And there's a lot of semi-talented people that are big stars. And it's being in the right place at the right time. And I just happened to be. We were playing in Salem, Oregon at an armory. We were the hottest thing going up in Oregon and Washington at that time, but that and a quarter will get you a cup of coffee these days, I guess. But, you know, it didn't mean anything. I mean, we were a big deal there, but so what? And so we were playing in Salem, and this armory was packed. We must have had 3,000 people in this armory, and that's all the place would hold. And it was just solid bodies, and it was a dance. And they had a great big stage at one end. And we were performing there that night, and, you know, like I say, we were the hottest thing going in the Northwest, and Dick Clark came into town, and he had one of his old rock and roll reviews on the other side of town, and maybe 20 people showed up at his thing, and he had about four big stars on his show. I won't mention the names, but they were big then, and he couldn't believe that they got no people. And so he inquired, where is everybody? And they said, everybody is seeing Paul Revere and the Raiders. And he goes, what is a Paul Revere and the Raiders? And they said, well, if you don't know, then you should find out. And he didn't go down to see us, but he sent his road manager down to spy, to see what was going on. And he walked in this place, and it was solid bodies. And we were playing wide open. And we had these three-cornered hats on and these funny-looking suits, and the band was standing on top of their amplifiers, and I had my piano set on fire. I used to set a piano on fire every night. I used to buy a piano. In those days, you could buy a piano for $50. I mean, pianos were cheap. You could buy old uprights. And I used to destroy a piano every night. It was a cheap gimmick. And we used to destroy guitars. I used to go to the Hawk Shop and pick up some $50 guitars, and we used to destroy those on stage. We were the most destructive band. We were the Who 20 years earlier. And we were tearing up our equipment, piano was blazing, and here is this band playing, you know, with these colonial costumes on. And the guy didn't believe his eyes. He said, this is the most bizarre thing I have ever seen in my life. And he told Dick Clark about it. And it was about a year later that Dick Clark was putting together an idea for a television series called Where the Action Is. And he needed a group that would appear on the show regularly. But he wanted somebody that was visual. And most rock and roll bands were the most boring things in the world to watch. They just stood there and played and stared at each other. And so this guy that worked for Dick Clark says, remember that band up in the Northwest that was so crazy? I mean, that band was visual. Can you imagine them on television? And so Dick says, well, get a hold of them. So they contacted me. And when they called me up, I thought they were putting me on. They said, hey, you want to be on a network television show? And I said, sure.
and then you hung up.
Right.
Yes.
And so they called back. And anyway, you know, the longer they talked, I thought, you know, maybe they're serious about this. And so they asked us if we'd come to Hollywood to shoot the pilot, which is the original or initial show, you know. And so I says, well, for enough money, you know, I'll go to the moon. It doesn't matter to me. And So they came up with enough money, so we went down there and shot the pilot. And to make a long story short, about 6 months later, it was picked up by ABC, and they contacted me again. And they says, hey, we're going on the air. You're going to be a big star. And I says, oh, sure. And I'll believe it when I see it. And it went on the air, and within about 2 weeks, the fan mail was pouring in by the boxcar loads. It was unbelievable. And unbelievable.
And the name of the show was
Where the Action Is.
Actually, it was Freddie Cannon who had the national hit.
Yep.
And how did that happen?
Same old story. We recorded it first, recovered. No, what happened was we, at that point, we had another record out as a single at the time. And when the show came on the air, we had already cut the Where the Action Is theme song. But because we had another song, another single out at the time, we couldn't put that one out right away. It was just timing. And so Freddie put he put his version out, and it was a monster hit.
And you were saying that it happened one night at supper with Dick Clark.
I'm sure that's exactly how it happened.
We're talking with Paul Revere of Paul Revere and the Raiders. We'll have more for you in just a minute on TC of Paul Revere and the Raiders. You were on a lot of television shows. Were you the first rock and roll band on the Tonight Show?
Come to think of it, I think we were. Yeah, I think we were. Yeah, I never thought about that, yeah.
Arnie Fogel, who was our resident TC trivia master, came up with that bit of information earlier this afternoon.
Yeah. We were also the Penguins' official band when he was running for mayor of Gotham City on the Batman series.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, we were the Penguins' band, you know, went around and promoted the Penguin. I saw that rerun on TV somewhere. I was in some town, I don't know, a few months ago, and I turned on the TV, and there I was, young, on television. I couldn't believe it.
You started handling the business of the band, and Mark Lindsay started writing the songs on a pretty regular basis then.
Yeah, in the very beginning, we used to write together. And then as we became successful, somebody had to start watching the dollars. So I took on that chore. And he concentrated on writing. He did a lot of writing in the early years.
I'm looking at your Paul Revere and the Raiders' Greatest Hits album. B-Man wrote a couple of here for you, too.
Barry Mann, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Barry Mann and Cynthia Wheel wrote Kicks and Hungry and another song that we were just about to record. It was called We Gotta Get Out of This Place. And it was submitted to us by Barry Mann and Cynthia Wheel because we'd already had hits with Kicks and Hungry. So they submitted We Gotta Get Out of This Place to us, and so we were going to cut that. But at the time, we still had a record on the charts, and we were on a tour, and we didn't have time to get into the studio to cut it. And by the time we did, somebody else at their office or somebody got crossed up, and they got that song to the Animals. And so the Animals recorded it. And so we were just going into the studio to cut it when all of a sudden I heard it on the radio. And I went, you got to be kidding. And which really upset me it upset them because, you know, we'd already agreed that we were going to record it. And there was a screw-up. But anyway, it didn't matter.
Paul Revere and the Raiders. Kicks. You still do this one, don't you?
Oh, you bet.
Any idea how many shows you have done with Paul Revere and the Raiders?
Could figure it up pretty quick. I remember, well, last year we worked 300 nights, and we did a minimum of 2 shows a night, so there's 600 in 1 year, and which is not that far from being an average, I suppose, about between 500 and 600 shows a year for 22 years, whatever that adds up to be.
You're headquartered out of Reno, Nevada now?
No.
You're not?
No. No, I live in Idaho. Always have. We work in Las Vegas, Tahoe, Reno, Hawaii, and Miami are about the only places we work in the winter. And in the summertime, we work Disney World, Disneyland, those type of amusement parks, Six Flags, those type of things, and state fairs. And that's pretty much what we do. But, I mean, you know, we work Nevada more than anything. We work Nevada probably totally, maybe 30 weeks out of the year that we work Nevada.
Are you the person who came up with the costumes and the choreography and the dialogue for the show?
Yeah, when I started the band up, there was the worst group in the world, and so I knew we had to do something. So I put us some funny little costumes and and kept the band fun and crazy. And as the group got better, that always stayed a part of it. This show from the very beginning, the very first time I ever stepped on stage with the band, it was always done tongue-in-cheek. I mean, I started the band up for a joke. It was as simple as that. And 22 years later, I'm still doing it. And it's, you know, and I do it for the fun of it. If it wasn't fun, believe me, I'd quit instantly. I did quit for 2 years, and I found out I really missed it. Because I always thought, well, if I ever get to a point where I don't really need to do it, I won't do it. You know. Once you got enough money, you know, you sit around your pool all day long and read your scrapbook, right? That isn't the way it works. I remember when I was younger, I used to think, why do people like Bob Hope and Jack Benny and big stars, why do they keep working themselves to death when they don't have to? I mean, financially, they don't have to. Well, you find out eventually that when you don't have to, that's when it's the most fun. It really starts really being fun when you don't have to go to work. When you don't have to do it, you can't believe how much fun it gets, because there's no pressure on. There is no pressure on you whatsoever. You do it strictly for the fun of it. And then the show even gets better. I think the show that we have now is the best show we've ever had. I think my band's the best that it's ever been. The show's the best that's ever been. And I think part of it is because there's no pressure anymore. You know, I'm not trying to have to prove anything. I don't have to keep up an image. I'm not trying to do anything but have fun. Simple as that.
You're at the Carlton backstage right now.
There you go.
And you'll be there through March 7th or 8th, I believe.
Another 8th, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's at least another week, yeah.
Two shows nightly?
Every night, except Monday. Sunday and Monday? No, Monday. Sunday we're working. Yeah, Monday off.
And besides doing Paul Revere and the Raiders, you do a whole medley of things from the 60s.
Yeah, it depends on where we're playing. You know, when we're playing this kind of a place, I look at the audience. If they all look like they're pushing my age out there, then I give them what I would want to hear, you know. And it depends on the age group. You know, every show is a little different, but basically that's what we do is songs out of the 60s, because that's pretty much what people remember us from. So,
and of course all your old hits. Your biggest one was
biggest selling record we ever had was the Indian Reservation. Sold 3 million copies.
Yeah.
And that was a good one. That was the hardest one to get anybody to play. It was unbelievable. That record was out for 5 months. It was number 187 with an anchor. Nobody would play that record. Nobody. I was sure that record was a hit because in my hometown, it was a monster, you know. And in your hometown, you know, they don't play your record just because you're from there. Fact is, you're less likely to be appreciated in your hometown than anywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because it was such a hit in my hometown, I knew that I had a hit record. But the rest of the country wasn't playing it. So I ended up having to get on my old motorcycle. I had a big old chopper motorcycle. The front end is about 10 feet long. And me and another guy, he had a bike too. And we took off across the country and spent one entire summer traveling across the United States for 3 months. I laid the band off. I says, I'll see you later. And I took off, and we hit every radio station we could. I hit over 300 radio stations promoting that record. And eventually that slowly but surely started up the charts. And that's why it sold so much, I guess. It was so slow going to number one. And then it stayed there for about a month or two, and then it came slowly down. And in the process, it sold 3 million copies, which totally amazed everybody, because the record company had given up on it. They says, Paul, this record's a dud. I said, no, it isn't. It's a hit. I guarantee it. And turned out I was right.
We'll be playing Indian Reservation here for you in minutes on TC. We're talking with Paul Revere, and right now I'm a little hungry. And remind people that you will be at the Carlton Backstage through February 7th or 8th.
Right.
And two shows nightly. And we've got your big hit of the 60s up here now.
Okay.
Hungry.
All right.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me and the bear.
You like that bear?
Love the bear.
Paul Revere and the Raiders' greatest hit from the 60s, Hungry. And I can't say enough good things about the show they do out at the Carlton, 6:30 and 10:30. And we could have sat here and talked to them until the cows came home tonight. But right now it's time to make another payment on the program.